Okay, so we begin the Vehi She'amda. We hold up the glass of wine or grape juice. Vehi She'amda, Vehi She'amda, L'avoteinu ve'lanu. Vehi She'amda, Vehi She'amda, L'avoteinu ve'lanu. Shelo echad bilvad amad aleinu lechaloteinu. Shelo echad bilvad amad aleinu lechaloteinu. Ela shebechol dovador omidim aleinu lechaloteinu. Ela שבכל דור ודור עומדים עלינו לחלותינו והקדוש ברוך הוא מצילנו מידם והקדוש ברוך הוא מצילנו מידם וישעמד על אבותינו ולנו. The following is the covenant of Avraham Avinu, is what stood by us and our forefathers. Shelo echad bilvad amad aleinu lechaloteinu. It wasn't only one enemy who tried to annihilate us. Ela shebechol dor vador omedim aleinu. I tremble every year that I read this. Every generation has their people who want to annihilate us. We look out the window and we see Kalandia. When Jews, by mistake, walk into there, then the odds of them walking out alive is not high, right? Soldiers walked in once last year, and they ran for their lives, even with their weapons. And these are people who I see their homes from my house. Every generation has had omedim aleinu lechaloteinu, people who stand against us, and they want to annihilate us. V'akadosh baruch hu matzilenu miyadam, and it is Hashem who rescues us from their hand. Now, my tradition is that when we say Hashem's name, V'akadosh baruch hu, we get up in the seat a little bit in honor of Hashem's name. Tzei ulmad, we move on.
Why do you repeat each line twice?
Just for the tune. Just for the song. Okay.
Can we sing it again?
You want to sing it again?
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. Yes? Everyone's with you. Vehi she'amda, vehi she'amda, l'avoteinu ve'lanu. Vehi she'amda, vehi she'amda, l'avoteinu ve'lanu. Shelo echad bilvad amad aleinu lechaloteinu. Shelo echad bilvad amad aleinu lechaloteinu. Ela shebechol dor vador omidim aleinu lechaloteinu. Ela shebechol dor vador עומדים עלינו לחלותינו והקדוש ברוך הוא מצילנו מידם והקדוש ברוך הוא מצילנו מידם. Why they stole my apikom and Ima. Okay. Good for you.
Now you know why we wanted to sing again.
Say you'll mad. Go and learn. What love and the Aramean wanted to do to Yaakov, our forefathers. Pharaoh decreed only against the males, but Lavan wanted to destroy everything. And this is very scary. The Jewish people were just beginning. What was the threat? Yaakov Avinu with 10, 11 children. And already anti-Semitism exists. His own father-in-law, Lavan the Aramean, wants to kill him. As the verse says, Shenema, Arami Oved Avi. So we look back and we say the first anti-Semite was Lavan, Yaakov Avinu's father-in-law, Arami Oved Avi. The Aramean wanted to destroy my father.
Why?
But why?
Otherwise, we wouldn't have a story.
Torah wasn't given yet. No reason for sinners. Wasn't he just his nature? He was jealous?
Yeah, nothing to do.
Oh, there's the Shabbat here. It does seem up Sinai.
It's like wilding the coyote, he had nothing to do.
The Pasuk says that Lavan was jealous of Yaakov's prosperity. And perhaps, here we see that the Jew can never get it right. That when the Jews are successful, so we're hated for being successful. You see that Avram Avinu was chased, Yitzchak Avinu was chased. Leich me'imanu, leave, ki atzamta mimenu, because you've been more successful than us. Excuse me, why would you kick me out because I was successful? Does anyone think to tell Trump, go back to Ireland, you've been too successful? Right? But to the Jew, throughout our history, whenever we've been successful, that was a reason for enmity. Perhaps, because it does, the pasuk seems to correlate that. Vayari Yaakov, Yaakov saw how Lavan didn't look at him the same way, and Lavan was saying, "Oh, that wealth he made off of me!" Right? That's right. What the pasuk says.
Everything you have is mine. You're sharing
right?
Your mind.
Right. So Lavan ignores how dishonest he was with Yaakov, and how Hashem helped him succeed. That's again on a pshat level. That's what seems to be.
On a different thing, when it talks about Vishamda,
just 1 second, please. I would like to research your question, because I'm really forced to put together two things. The pshat I'm telling you is in Rashi, in the story of Lavan. However, in the Haggadah, when we mention Lavan, the question is there another theme? Is it correct? I'm taking from Rashi in Bereishis, in Genesis, and I'm saying, okay, based on that Rashi, this is why Lavan was upset with Yaakov. However, I question whether in the story of Arami Oved Avi, which is really in Devarim, it's not, it's a record in Devarim. We look back as to what happened. Is there another theme over there? And I want to look into it again. Okay? I have to check. Yeah?
When you're saying Vihisha Amda, and I, you know, it makes sense that that Lavan was one of the people of Vihisha Amda. It's not exclusive to Amalek.
No. Who said Amalek?
Well, then I'm saying Amalek. What
does Amalek have to do with it?
Amalek is also people who wanted to destroy us.
Okay.
But I'm saying
they don't have exclusivity.
It makes them a little less important if it's not just Amalek that's out to get us.
That's a good question, not for the Seder night. It's a good question. Deserves a long answer. Okay. We learned it in Rav Charlap, but not for now. Yeah. And I wrote about it in my letter on Parsha Zohar. Okay. Arami Oved Avi. We move on. Arami Oved Avi Ve'ed Mitzrayim. So now we are entering a section of the Haggadah that's going to work as follows for the next few pages. The Haggadah is going to quote a Pasuk, and then the way Midrashim do, it's going to take every word in that Pasuk and define it in Midrashic form. So it first quotes a pasuk or a few psukim, and then it breaks down the pasuk and gives you an analysis of what we learned from that word. So now we start going through it. Vayered Mitzrayma, Yaakov Avinu went down to Egypt. Anusar pi adiber, he went because Hashem forced him to go. And that's a very important concept for those of you who might find yourself in Chutz Laaretz. If that happens to you, then it should be anusar pi adibur. It should be, what choice do I have? I'm here. So long as that's the attitude, so then, Vayagol Sham. So then, when he came to Egypt, Yaakov Avinu milamet shloirad Yaakov Avinu lishtaka b'Mitzrayim. When Yaakov went into Egypt, there was no intention to settle. Ela lagur Sham. He came there as a sojourner. Shneimav yomul pro lagur ba'atzvan kein mrelatzon shel avadecha kichvedaram ve'atznan bateishon avadecha be'etz goshen. They told Pharaoh, you know, we've only come here because there's a famine. We need some grazing for our sheep. So let us just be in, let us dwell in the land of Goshen. So the intention was, I'm going back. When I went to Chutz Arts, there was one time when I didn't have a return ticket. I had gone there, I learned in Rav Feinstein's yeshiva, and I knew I wanted to come back. I didn't know when.
So I never switched the watch on my hand. Back there was once a time they used to wear this thing on their hands called a watch. It was before everyone was walking around with cell phones. So the watch on my hand was an analog watch, and it said the time of Israel. So people would sometimes stop me in yeshiva and say, you know, your watch is off. And I'd look at it and I'd say, no, it isn't. And they'd say, what do you mean, right? It was 7 hours off, right? At this time it would read, right, 7 hours earlier, later. So I'd say, oh no, it's an Israeli time. So they'd say, why is your watch on Israeli time? And I'd say, because I'm going back. I figured I'm not going to switch the time on the watch because I'm headed right back. And they'd say, really, when's your flight? And I'd say, I don't know yet. Isn't that sad? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know when I'm going back. I just know I am. So I'm. And then they go, oh. I go, what? Oh, when are you going back? What does that mean? Oh, a person is supposed to be in Chutzar. It's Yaakov Avinu thought he was going for 400 years. But the attitude was, I'm not coming to settle. I'm coming to dwell here. I said, you know, I came here. I'm going to learn here. And I don't know how long I'm going to be here. But I'm going back. So I'm not switching my watch because I want to keep reminding myself I don't belong here. That time is right. The time on the watch, that's the right time. I'm off. I'm in a place where the time is different. So I have to keep reminding myself I'm going back. Yaakov Avinu goes down to Mitzrayim vayagosham. He's going there without an intention to settle. Vimtei me'at. He went down with few people. This is an amazing phenomenon. We went down to Mitzrayim, we were 70 people. In 210 years, we became 2 million. So you think about it. Each family had 6 kids. Okay, so you imagine they gave birth 3 times. That's 18 kids per family. Okay, 18 kids times 70. Let's do the math. Gentlemen, help me out. 18 times 70. 70 people went down.
Why so many people? Though?
Now it was worse.
260.
Well, no, but was there
1,260. First generation. Now do that times another. Let's do times 12. 1,260 times 12.
15,000.
You're at 15,000. Now do another times 12.
181,000.
And if you do one more time times 12.
You got a lot. 2.2 million.
Okay. So all you need is 4 or 5 generations in 200 years when they're having such big families. Yes.
If you had
70, you have to like consider
you have to divide by 2
couples. First. So it wasn't exactly 70.
Look at the numbers and tell me if what you said is right. Girls aren't mentioned in the 70.
You have it is.
One girl.
In terms of the six, is it literal in a sense? Because Moshe didn't have 5 brothers.
How do you know? Move on. The Levites didn't work, so they weren't blessed.
The
Levites were a smaller tribe. Look at the numbers.
I would have thought the opposite. I'm saying, why was the work affecting how many people they would have?
Because the blessing of having 6 was a response to Pen Yirbeh. When the Egyptians said, lest they multiply, Hashem said, yes, they will. Ken Yirbeh. We move on to... they became there a great nation. The Jews stood out there. Atzum, they were mighty. And so I tell my children at this point, imagine, you're an Egyptian walking down the street and you see 6 muscle men like this, twins, right? Walking down the street, right? So you see these big shouldered, big muscles. They're working out in the field all day.
You know,
and
Jews.
6 twins filling up the streets, right? And they're walking down there. That's the Atzum. They were mighty. So the Egyptians got very scared. You know, they not only have a demographic issue, the Jews are big, hulky warriors. Atzum. Yes.
How come we're not like that now?
I don't know. Give us another few years.
What?
Give us another few years. We're getting bigger as time goes on.
Well, I mean, the stereotypical Jew in Europe was the complete opposite of that, so...
Okay, they were undernourished. Look at my grandmother, right? My grandmother's this tall. So my grandmother told me that in her family, everyone else was big. She was undernourished. She went through the Holocaust. She's small.
Why was she...
Why was she undernourished? Ah, it's a different story. Atzum, I'll tell you a different time if you want.
I'm sorry, I should have said that.
They were numerous. K'mo she'ne'emar, as the verse says, Revavak tzema chasadei netetich, Hashem made us like the weeds or the plants of the field that keep growing. You grew, you developed, you became charming. You developed as a young lady, but you were unclothed. I passed over you, and I saw you wallowing in your blood. And Hashem said to us, even though you're bleeding, even though you're in blood, you will live. And Hashem said to us, even though you are in blood, you will live. And that's been our history. Even though it's been a bloody history, we continue to live as a Jewish people. That's a pasuk. No, it's in Yechezkel. The Navi Yechezkel tells a story. And here again, when I have people at the Seder table who feel like they know the whole story of the Seder, so I go off into this pasuk. And I tell the following story, the Navi in Yechezkel. If we open up the Yechezkel, so the Navi in Yechezkel describes the following story. There was once a man who adopted a young goyel. And actually, no, he passed by and he saw a young girl lying in the field, wallowing in her blood. Yechezkel, what they call the 16th chapter, he tells the following story.
How do you know exactly where it is?
It says it in my Haggadah. I have to be honest, no? The Rabban Shalom says to the Jewish people, let me remind you how you were born. When you were born, no one cut your umbilical cord. You weren't washed in water. No one put anointment on you. No one took care of you. No one cared about you. You were lying there in the field. No one had any mercy over you. You were thrown in the field with all the dirty, the way a baby's born, covered with the blood and the placenta. And I passed over you and I saw you there, moving around in your blood. And I said to you, even though you're covered with blood, you will live. And I said to you, even though you're covered with blood, you will live. And then I helped you grow, and you flourished like the field, like the plants in the field. And you grew, and then you became charming, and you developed as a young lady, but you were uncovered. So I saw that you had grown, and you really needed to be taken care of. I passed my wing over you, I covered your shame, and I swore to you, and I said, I will have a covenant with you, and I cleaned you. And I gave you ointment, and I put the nicest clothing upon you. I gave you the finest materials. I gave you the finest jewelry. I gave you bracelets. I gave you necklaces. I gave you rings. I gave you earrings. I gave you a crown. I gave you all this beautiful clothing, and you were so beautiful, you became my queen. Nations admired your beauty, because I had given you all that beauty, says Hashem. Then you took confidence in your beauty and you cheated on me and you went with other men and you took all the gifts I gave you and you shared them with other men. This is the story of the Jewish people. So the Jewish people who had all the gifts after being taken out of Egypt would go with the golden calf, would go and serve idols. That's the metaphor of the book of Yechezkel, this part of the book of Yechezkel. However, the beginning of the metaphor, that we are lying there wallowing in blood, is a description of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. The blood of the Paschal offering, the blood of the circumcision, they were the merits with which we left Mitzrayim. And we quote this as the pasuk that would describe Jewish history. B'damayich chayim, though you bleed, you live. That's being Jewish history. And we say this at every bris. Yeah.
On the note of the Egilah Zahav, what was the time, min ta'ana of, you gave us too much gold?
It's good for not for the Seder. Let's move on. What? At the Seder now. We go, what?
I'm missing half of the paragraph.
Okay, we move on. So again, we quote a pasuk And we're going to define, explain the different words of that pasuk. And at the Seder, I also rushed through this. I explained, but I'm rushing through the reading so that the children don't fall asleep on me. This is what it says. Gentlemen, do you want me to expand or contract? At this point, I can zoom, or at this point, I can explain. If our goal is that you have koach and we get to the meal within the next 2 hours, so I'll zoom. If our goal is that you know as many midrashim as possible and know as many stories as possible for the Seder, then I will expand on each section here so that you learn. I'm saying there are two, we said there are three components we want to accomplish tonight. One is the stories and midrashim that connect to the Haggadah. One is the practice, the halachos of how we perform the Seder, so that involves the next step we're going to get to. And finally are the songs in the end. So I can invest more time giving stories and midrashim over here, but that means we will get to part two of the halachot of the meal later. So you have to guide me. How many people want us to expand now?
Expand.
And the rest of you want me to zoom and get to the meal?
Who does
that?
Do we really have meal
tonight?
Okay, what if we take
I'm ready for a meal now, too. Don't worry.
We might need one.
Deserve a good, like, 10-minute-ish break or something.
So take a break. We'll continue. You take a break.
Tommy, it's not
me. Huh.
I think that if people want to go grab a cup of coffee, they can go take a cup of coffee.
You know, maybe I could enjoy.
I can't bring pizza.
You got lots of pizza.
What? Okay, so I'm going to try to do something
like
in between.
A bathroom break.
We could also
like
break
that.
Up.
It's like going to a hockey.
Break
game.
Up the group.
Anyway,
you
know what that's like.
Individual songs.
Break
no one cares about hockey.
Okay, your football.
Okay, so those who need to get a breather should get a breather. Those who need a cup of coffee should get a cup of coffee. And I'm going to go in between. I'm not going to expand 2 hours, but I'll expand a little bit. Okay, so here we have the famous Medrash. That there was this consulting of three people, Yisro, Jethro, Eov, Job, Vayareh Otanu Amitrim, the second one. Just the beginning of the paragraph. And Bilam. And they said, let's outsmart Hashem. Hashem promised he won't bring a flood, so let's kill the Jewish boys by throwing them into the water. Hashem won't be able to pay us back. He said he won't bring a flood to the world. So they said, Havanitchakmalo, let's outsmart him. Why were they concerned, Pen Yirbeh, lest we multiplied? Because we were multiplying. Why were they concerned about a war? Because there had been a war.
Itchakmalo, singular.
Correct. Lo, to Hashem. So there had been a war where the Egyptians thought they were losing against the northern Africans, and so they agreed amongst them, let's retreat and leave the Jews on the front line. The Jews didn't realize this was happening, and the Jews continued charging, and they were victorious. And they continued all the way down into northern Africa, being victorious against the enemies of the Egyptians. When they had finished the battle, they looked around and noticed that only the Jews were left to fight the battle. They realized what the Egyptians had done to them. On their way back into Egypt, they killed every Egyptian they could find out of anger at what the Egyptian army had done to them. That moment of killing the Egyptians aroused within the Egyptians the recognition that the Jews are a threat. Until that point, they had served in the Egyptian army successfully. But now they saw that the Jews were willing to turn on the Egyptians. At that moment, the Egyptians recognized, hey, if a real war happened, if they really want to go to war against us, we have a problem.
I'm sorry, why did the Egyptians double cross us?
They
thought they were going to lose, so they said, let the Jews lose at war, let's move back, let's retreat. This is quoted in Seder Hadorot by Rav Halperin.
It's kind of like, they'll hold up the enemy, we get out of here safe and sound. And
something like that, right. Vayanunu, but it wasn't agreed upon. They had turned on the Jews. Vayanunu, and the Egyptians afflicted us.
Why did the Jews go back?
Their families were there. Kumosh Namaz, the Pasuk says, they set up taskmasters over them. Lemanan otobesiv lotam. Their goal was to oppress them. Even the Jews built storage cities for Pharaoh. At Pitom et Ramses, they built the city of Pitom, which was on a fault line. There were always tremors. They'd be building, and what they built would collapse, and people would get killed by the building. And Ramses comes from the word Roses, also a place where things would be destroyed. They made them build on quicksand. So as they were working, their lives were in danger. And so the Egyptians had a goal to afflict the Jews, to break the Jews. And that's why they would sometimes come and say, just dig. And the Jews start digging, and they wouldn't tell him when to stop. I'll come back and tell you when. And the Egyptian would leave for the whole day. Then the Egyptian would come back at the end of the day and say, okay, now put the dirt back. Their goal was to break the Jews.
So why didn't we just beat them up? We just thought we could take them. So why would we do this? Vayitenu
aleinu avodah kasha. They placed hard work upon us. As the Pasuk says, the Egyptians subjugated the Jews to farech, to back-breaking labor. Their goal was to break us. And so they gave men women's work and women men's work. And they tried to work them to the point where the Jews were going to be broken, and they didn't believe they could stand up to their masters. There was a psychological success on behalf of the Egyptians to bring the Jews to a position where the Jews believed they couldn't win. The idea that in Egypt no slave ever escaped alive was very ingrained in Egyptian society.
El Hashem Elokei Avoteinu. We cried out to Hashem, the God of our forefathers. Vayishma Hashem et kolenu. Hashem heard our voices. Ve'artonyenu ve'tamaleinu ve'tlachatzeinu. And Hashem saw our affliction, our burden, our oppression. Va'nitzak. We cried out. El Hashem Elokei Avoteinu, to Hashem, the God of our forefathers, as the Pasuk says. The king of Egypt died, and the Jewish people started crying, and their cry went up to heaven. And every Jew has to know that crying, even if you don't know what you're going to say, the mere cry that says, Ribbono Shel Olam, help me, I don't know how to pray. It's just, I'm crying. It's the blow of the shofar that pierces the heavens. And that's what it says here, Vanitzak. They just cried. They didn't even know what to say. Their cry went up. Vayishma Hashem et koleinu, Hashem heard our cry. The story goes, there was a man from the tribe of Dan. Him and his wife were making the mortar. Now the mortar is what really hurt the Jews. And we have the charoset to remember the mortar. The most difficult thing, and even today, every worker will tell you that the most difficult thing is working that mortar. It's back-breaking labor. It's working the mortar. And as they would work the mortar, the Egyptians would beat them. Now when they would beat them, sometimes a Jew would lose an eye. Sometimes a Jew, they'd maim him in the arm. When the Jews left Mitzrayim, it says the Jews left as a maimed people. The majority of the people were wounded. The people of Israel, this one was missing an arm, this one was missing a leg, that one was missing an eye. And the hardest thing of all the work was the mortar. And it says there was a man from the tribe of Dan that he and his wife were working the mortar. And the Egyptians said, you're not making the quota. So they took their own baby and threw him into the mortar under their feet. And they continued whipping them, and they had no choice but to continue stepping in the mortar. Now, in the mortar, they had the stalks of hay, and the stalks of hay would pierce their feet. And so they saw their own blood mixing with the blood of their baby. And we commemorate this with the hardest labor was the mortar, and we put wine into our charoset to remember the blood that was swirling around as the people stood in the charoset, in the mortar, and had their own blood mixing with their own children's blood. And the Medrash says it was this man from the tribe of Dan, him and his wife, who stood there and saw under their own feet their child gasping and breathing his last breath. And then they saw his blood mixing with their blood. It was their cry in the mortar that went up to heaven. That when the Pasuk says, Vayishma Hashem, Hashem heard. What did Hashem hear? We were crying all the time. That was the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak. That was the prayer that pierced the heavens that Hashem said, enough. Yes?
Two things. Every year it bugs me that charoset is dafka, the tastiest thing.
And that's because you eat it in my house. Other people make it much more sour. They use sour apples.
I'm saying I would make it worse than the maror. I'm saying right. This is... as always bugs me is... Because that was on Pesach, right? That one with the mortar.
I don't know. I don't remember it saying that. It's Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer.
It was on Pesach, and one of the commentaries says Pesach the year before.
Okay, I didn't remember that. Okay.
It's the same thing about Brit Ben Abitrim being on Pesach. The problem was created on Pesach, and the problem was solved on Pesach.
Right.
So, Noah, what have we accomplished?
That's a good question. What's bothering you?
I'm saying if we're saying the Koach, one of the things I heard is Pesach is right every night. It's dafka the night, because that's when we have the dangers, and this night we have We have nothing to worry about. But I'm saying the problem was solved on Pesach, then I would understand it. But if it was the problem was created on Pesach and the problem was solved on Pesach,
which problem was created on Pesach?
Well, we have Brit Ben Abitzarim was on Pesach. With the year 400 years, you're going to be in Egypt. And also the story of the Charoset.
So we don't view Brit Ben Abitarim as the force that got us into Egypt. We view it as the force that got us out of Egypt. Meaning, right. Just like the first 190 years, we had fulfilled our obligation without being in Egypt. We were strangers in Israel. Had there not been baseless hatred between Yosef and his brothers, then the next 210 years would have continued being in the land of Israel. It was the baseless hatred that made us go down to Egypt. Meaning the covenant is what got us out of Egypt.
I tell you, Yosef was a rotef.
Whatever. Okay, we move on.
Hey.
Yeah.
And the charoset, so why is it dafka very tasty?
That's a question of my tradition. That's not a question I'm saying. Other people make it much more sour.
I don't know. I've had a lot of tasty charoset.
Yeah,
I've been around the block.
Take it off the more. Nobody does that. They put that on. They keep it on the thing. It's delicious.
We have sour. What are the onions called? You know the long ones?
Leeks.
Yeah. We like scoop from the greenhouse, and like you try and get as much in as you can. Where's this story from? With the child and
Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer.
With the old child and the
child in the mortar is in Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer.
Pirkei
de Rebbe Eliezer. That's a medrash, which you guys could learn. It's, we have it online. I taught almost all of it. It's there in Hebrew.
The midrash you said before about the Jews going to war for the Egyptians.
That's in Seder Adorot.
And so, what's the wine? The apple represents this.
The apple. It says in the medrash that the Jewish people are compared to an apple orchard. Says tachat tapuach horaticha, or it says there are a few places. I don't remember the pasuk. Sdei tapuchim, yeah. But the Jewish people are compared to an apple orchard.
Now about apples.
Yeah.
Kitapuach
batzeiar kendodi ben abanim. The pasuk says in the Song of Songs.
And there's wine.
Like an apple tree among a forest.
There's wine, there's mortar, there's dates. Right. So what's the significance of that?
These are the fruits we're compared to. The Jewish people are compared to grapes in Isaiah and in the Song of Songs. The Jewish people are compared to an apple. The Jewish people are compared to an egoz, as the pasuk says, El ginat egoz yarati, lirot pei beyanacha. So these are the dates, Tzadika Tamar Yifrach. So we are compared to these. These are among the fruits we're compared to. Yeah.
We're always very torn with the tapuach meaning an apple. I'm saying there's the Gemara in Tanit that the fruit is before its leaves, and Tosfot there says it's a etrog, and in Shir Shirim the Targum also says it's an etrog.
Okay.
But this parish says it's literally an apple.
Okay, it's a good question. Okay.
And with regards to the Brit Ben Abitarim being that was, I mean, it says V'ger Yezarecha Beretz Nochriya, but I'm saying he doesn't mention slavery so much.
It says Vavadum. The question is, what is Vavadum?
So I'm saying that was Talui in the Sinat Chinam. Like God was saying, if you have Sinat Chinam, you're going to be more. I'm saying, I don't understand what's the connection between.
It didn't say how many years would be Vavadum Vinutam.
What's the connection between a Ger Yezarecha and Sinat Chinam making you more of a Ger Yezarecha?
No, it made us more into Vavadum Vinutam.
I'm saying, what's the connection between the Sinat Chinam and
the idea was that through Egypt we were supposed to unite. The suffering of Egypt was supposed to unite us.
Because we weren't united.
Correct. But with baseless hatred.
So the goal was of all the stages of our 400 years was to unite us. Saying because Avram's problem was
another question.
Avram says b'mayda kirishana. I'm saying his problem was unity.
But Egypt.
That's another question. That's another question.
But Egypt didn't work for unity. Because when Moshe hits the Egyptian, he comes back and finds everybody knows about it.
Right.
No, it didn't seem to do the job.
So I'm going to take your questions and formulate them a little differently, okay? Let's put together all the questions. Sometimes we have to look at all the questions and say, okay, so what's the answer here? Okay, so question number one was, why would the suffering be, what would that help for what happened with Yosef's brothers? Question number two was, it doesn't seem like the suffering of Egypt united us, because Moshe Rabbeinu says, now I know why you guys are suffering so more than any other nation, because you're completely not united. So if you combine the two questions, do you guys have an answer?
I mean, there's an answer that the suffering would want to make the people more united as opposed to if things were good. But that's going with the assumption that the Mechirat Yosef was dafka through Sina and not through Din of Herodic.
But if that really was the case, I mean, it didn't work. Horribly, so I don't understand why that would be the reason. Like it just hilariously failed. That kind of, if that was the case, so I don't understand why. Then.
Doesn't Gullus always seem to fail, anyways?
Broken system.
I don't know. I see that the Jewish people come out of Egypt. And when they come to accept the Torah, they're united.
Vayichan
Yisrael
neged ahar. There was an issue until.
But I do see that there were moments of great unity after leaving Egypt. I see that the Jewish people got together as groups to do the Paschal offering. I see that the Jewish people were prepared to recognize they were their own entity and get together as families and as groups and slaughter the Paschal lamb and risk their lives in clusters. And then I see that they go behind Moshe Rabbeinu. I mean,
the four-fifths who died in the plague of darkness, did they also kill the sheep?
They didn't get to that.
Okay, well,
I'm saying I would also add that Moshe Rabbeinu says it's time to leave Egypt. I don't find that people are saying, who are you, Moshe? Why should we listen to you, Moshe? I'm staying here, or...
But the 10 plagues, 10 world-shattering, open, miraculous plagues on Egypt create the Achdus. Why don't we have more of that and less of another nonsense?
Yeah.
I didn't know we didn't have more. I thought we had a lot of that. I don't know. I see a lot of that all the time. But coming back to here, there is a certain unity that's happening when we leave Mitzrayim. The unity of receiving the Torah, B, the unity of the people leaving Mitzrayim. It's true that under a certain pressure, when they're standing at the sea, there were those that said, let's go back. But you see that until that pressure, they were united and ready to go. And you see that for the majority of the time, we were able to hold on to that. It also deserves another... Ramban says the stress was also to show us philosophically that we were at the world's top metropolis for idol worship and sorcery. And over there, Moshe, they come in with a declaration: this is the hand of God, meaning the philosophical weight of the place that was most sophisticated and most knowledgeable about trickery and witchcraft and sorcery, they're coming out with a declaration, this is God, that would give us strength for forever. But now we move on in the Agadah. Wait, I don't know if everyone else wants us to continue with these questions. How many people want us to take questions? How many people want us to move on? Silence is acquiescence. How many people want us to move on? Okay, so we move on.
I'll write it down.
You need to get your stuff. I was just thinking this is a good way to keep you there. Okay. So we're running through now Psukim and the definition of the Psukim.
Hashem saw our afflictions. That's that people separated. They stopped being intimate with their wives. The wife would come to the husband. God saw the Jewish people, and Hashem knew. It means Hashem knew what no one else knew. Hashem knew that when the husbands would come home at night, the wife would say, "Let's have kids." And the husbands would say, "Never mind." And the wife would say, "What do you mean, never mind?" And the husband would say, "I don't have strength anymore." And the wife would say, "But we need a continuation of the Jewish people." And the husband would say, "For what?" And they reached a point where the husbands were not being intimate with their wives. Ve'tamaleinu, our affliction. Elu abanim, that's talking about our children. When the people saw that their sons were being thrown into the Nile, their daughters were being allowed to live with anticipation to be used for prostitution, so the people didn't want to have children anymore. And our oppression, that is a reference to the pressure. The pressure. So, at this point, at the Seder, I always go, V'etachatzenu zo adchak, so our oppression. I apologize to the listeners. If you have headphones in your ear, take them out right now. I don't want someone to suffer. Etlachatzenu, our oppression, zo adchak. That's a reference to the pressure.
Sorry? No, I got some people up there.
No.